The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello and welcome to the Professional Insights Podcast Season 4. Thank you all for tuning in, listening, sharing, and caring. Thank you to our sponsors, Brand Boulevard, who give our guests a nice little, thingamadooey. It changes every season.
And Bud Light too?
Yeah, no, they will not be getting Bud Light. We're not sponsored by a beer company. My name's Brandon Curry.
I'm Jeff Collins.
Josh Bond.
And Trevor Lindy.
And we have a guest today, another lawyer. I know this is just a huge law recording that we're doing right now. Hussein Kudrati from HSK Law Firm. How's it going, Hussein?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for joining and taking time out of your day. I know you've got, something like 20 some odd deals closing this month, or this week, or I don't know. You had a busy week, so I appreciate you you tuning in and giving us some of your time. So we won't keep you too long. Well, like our episodes are only about 20 minutes long to begin with. But there was a niche that came across with one of my clients that we mutually know. Confidentially, we will not go into detail. But it was the insight that you gave, and then the insight that you gave to me when it came to trust in the U.S. and all that kind of stuff, and how you utilize with estate planning life insurance and what have you. So I just wanted to let's break it down on the first piece, which is when you do estate, some like wills, POAs, estate, estate planning, trusts, and that kind of stuff in Canada. And then we can counteract that with what you do in the U.S. because you're also a resident in the U.S. as well. So you had some great insight on that I honestly did not know. So if you want to go down that route, by all means, I'll give you the floor.
Sure. So, I mean, the first thing is like, as you know, we ended up on the subject because of our mutual client. And the thing that a lot of Canadians don't realize is that in Canada, while we don't have a death tax or a estate tax per se, we have what is known as an estate administration tax. Now, there are ways around that. There is like dual wills and different strategies that you can implement. But fundamentally, when you die, you are deemed to have essentially disposed of all of your assets, capital, income, whatever. And well, a lot of people have a lot of capital generated in their properties, but they don't actually have a way to pay without necessarily liquidating those assets. And that's where I think having effective, and particularly having whole life insurance that you can potentially pay off when you're younger and in good health, especially if you're a young businessman starting off and can essentially build a good portfolio for yourself, having the insurance policy paid off can offer tremendous savings and peace of mind for your family. Like, think about it. Like, if most of your capital is tied up in your business, for example, you're not going to necessarily want to sell the business, complexity, whatever. You still have to essentially pay the piper on the capital gains. It could even force, even though your principal residence is not subject to capital gains, it could force that sale simply to free up capital to meet your obligations. So that's where having an effective insurance policy is extremely important. Now, and this is something that for wealth planning also, what's valuable in it is you can borrow against it during, once it's fully paid, there's cash value that you can borrow against. So it allows you to, if you're into real estate investing or things like that, I've seen many, many clients get down payments by borrowing against a life insurance policy to essentially get further ahead in their real estate game. And then the second thing that you can also do is not just that you can borrow against it, but you can pass out down more value. It's not just about flexibility. It's that if you're getting a whole pot of money, $1 million, $2 million. Like, I mean, I've seen clients get even $5-10 million worth of whole life insurance and more. So if you can get all of that into your sort of bucket when you die, your kids, your family have so much more to, you know, enjoy life and have that security. Isn't that ultimately what do we work so hard for, if not to leave something better for the next generation? So that's definitely, and, you know, I mean, you mentioned it when we chatted, like even like Ted Rogers mentioned, like his own experience and how he, I mean, and he argued that he was overinsured, but who knows?
Right.
You know, and so I just think that, and also the one thing I want to make sure that your listeners know is while it may seem expensive, it's actually cheap if you think about the long-term benefits. And two, you don't need to be a high net worth individual to benefit. I've got clients who don't even have an aggregate net worth of maybe $1 million. And today with real estate, if you're a homeowner in this area, more likely you have a net worth of $1 million or close to it if you've owned a home for more than three, four years. So don't think it's not for you. Explore the option and make sure that whenever you're doing a will, your lawyer's at least talking to you about it, at least talking to you about how you're going to be meeting your obligations and walking you through the numbers. So you at least have an idea, what's my tax bill looking like when I die and how is it being paid for? Fundamentally, it comes down to that question that a lot of people ignore.
Bondo, do you have got a comment on that from your...
Yeah, no, I mean, sometimes it's difficult to assess in advance what your asset pool is going to look like at the end of things. So, I mean, listen, I've commented on here before, and yeah. I've got a whole life policy myself, right? So I'm very supportive of that investment piece. For certain individuals, it makes absolute fabulous sense. I genuinely, a term policy would have a different approach, right? Because I don't think you could have. I've never seen it where you can borrow against it or whatever.
There's no cash value to borrow against.
Only the universal or the UL or the whole life. But again, in circumstances, if you can afford, you know, one of these types of policies within your portfolio, and again, I think it's a wise... Yeah. Wise thing to do, right?
Well, I can definitely comment on the forecasting piece, and that's where financial planners come in, right? I mean, you know, the lawyers don't necessarily, they shouldn't be put, that burden shouldn't be put on them. Because FP Canada gives us guidelines on what we're allowed to forecast our real estate at, or, you know, our all of our assets at, and what have you. So
what's real estate, like 3% or something?
3%, legit. Yeah. It's hilarious, but I mean, at the end of the day, when you look at compounding over 20 or 30 years,
no, for sure,
you'll get the spike in, you know, 2016 or 2021 now, but we might get a decline later on. So, but overall, you never know, right?
100%.
But then Hussein, you are, okay. So let me just, I got to remember, you are a resident in Kenya, the UK, the US, and in Canada. Did I miss a country?
Not really.
Okay.
Like those are the main ones.
Because that dovetailed, our conversation then dovetailed with our mutual client into, you know, the Rockefellers and what have you, because in the US they have an inheritance tax. Mm-hmm. And you brought up on how the trusts in the US work, and which I did not know about, because I know trusts in Canada, that's pretty, you know, that's where I'm educated and that's where my license is. But you mentioned something on how not all states, but some of the states, there is that loophole, and they obviously use life insurance 100%, but there's a designation, a living benefit. On the real estate, go ahead.
Well, so there's like the rule against perpetuities, right? That applies in the US, where in Canada, they have the 21-year trust rule, essentially, where at 21 years, you deem to essentially pay the gain, whatever it is that the trust has accrued. Whereas, and even if I may, I'd like to take a step back, that in the US and Canada, trusts are used very differently for estate planning, right? Whereas trusts here are used like more like safeguarding assets, you know, in case of, you know, like kid gets into a bad marriage or a disability or things like that.
Right.
Whereas in the US, like with the way the tax laws work in the US, it can be an amazing tool. And in fact, like everybody in the US who's got a basic estate plan will take advantage of a trust, because they can move the trust in, they can move assets into the trust. And therefore, then whatever the cost base, so say like, I mean, you bought shares of Microsoft for like $25, whatever, back in the day, right? Whatever the gross up is, the moment you move it into the trust, the cost base automatically becomes what that value is at that date.
Correct.
So you don't essentially pay that cost. Like, whereas in Canada, if you're moving it into the trust, you don't, you still kept at the original cost base. You don't get to just use the new cost base when you entered it into the trust. So it's things like that that are incredible. But again,
yeah,
one thing to be very mindful of is if you've got ties to both jurisdictions, using trust in either one, depending on where you're living at the time, is very useful, but very dangerous, because the two countries tax trusts in very, very different ways. So it is fun. Like, you almost need a, like a Picasso like touch to almost thread the needle to make sure that clients are being well looked after without triggering adverse tax implications. And that's the thing. But the fundamental point is, you trust can live a lot longer in the United States than they can live in Canada. In Canada, they can live, but what I mean is about the disposition of tax, is when does tax get triggered? Because at the end of the day, a life of a trust out to practitioners is what's the lifespan before tax has to be paid. Because ultimately, that's the whole reason these vehicles exist, is there a tax-efficient mechanism. It's not a tax avoidance. It's not a
deferral.
It is a tax deferral, and it's a tax minimization as well. Like, it doesn't just defer. In the U.S., you can actually minimize tax. That's why, like, people, almost everybody I know who's got American ties will always keep as much of their assets in a trust versus through their will. They almost put nothing through their will, as much as they can. Even if they've just got a couple of $100,000 in assets, they'll still take advantage of a trust, simply because then they avoid the probate rule. Because also in the US, they have a death tax, whereas mm-hmm. Canada doesn't, which is also why it evolved differently through the laws in both countries. Because in the US, you can be taxed up to 40% of the assets that you hold personally when you die. So it's pretty penal.
Sergeant and Mr. Smith, you're going to love this house.
Bunk beds in a closet?
There's no field manual for finding the right home. But when you do, USAA Homeowners Insurance can help protect it the right way. Restrictions apply.
Well, yeah, there's you, and there's also with dual citizens too, like the US CITES laws. Right. Mm-hmm. Which basically a lot of people are very ignorant of, especially in Niagara, who go and travel to the US all the time, buy a place in Florida, buy a place in South Carolina or Arizona, which were happening right, left and center when the market crashed in 2009 and 2010. And these people go and pass away. And the next thing you know, they didn't shelter it in a trust. And once they surpass a certain threshold, the U.S. CITES laws kick in, and it all depends on whoever is the president at the time can adjust the U.S. CITES laws, and it's your entire worldwide estate is subject to tax in the U.S. If it's to your point, if it's not done correctly, now
also, just the other thing, like, a lot of people, I don't know, like. You know, that I don't know about what other lawyers are seeing, but like, I know a lot of my clients don't either haven't even heard of a CBT or don't know how to establish a CBT. And even most lawyers don't know how to effectively structure and create a CBT, because that's the way to get around. When I mentioned about the conflict of between Canadian laws and American laws, CBTs is a trust vehicle that's recognized by both tax jurisdictions. But you have to be careful about creating it. Instead, what a lot of accountants and quite a few lawyers are suggesting is to keep going through the LLC structure. But LLCs are not necessarily taxed in a very friendly way in Canada, you know, because that flow-through mechanism of you only tax when something is paid out is not really recognized in Canada. So again, like the LLC for real estate investment in the U.S., a lot of people seem to be doing it without realizing that actually, does this truly make sense and is this the best path to go on? And two, how am I going to pass this asset on through the LLC? There isn't much thought given to that either.
Now, you mentioned in some of the states, they like I said, they use insurance to help pay off the tax bills and stuff like that. I mean, the Kennedys are one, the Rockefellers are others. But you mentioned that they can also dictate in some of the states what you cannot do in Canada. You can make a building a living benefit or a living...
You can appoint anything to be a life in being. So essentially, as long as a structure or something existed forever, so that's kind of how the George Washington estate is still open, because they actually, or the Thomas Jefferson estate for that matter, because they designated the estate, like, which becomes the property, as the life in being itself. So therefore now 300-400 years later, or whatever it is now, not quite 400, but over 300 years later, those estates are still open. Whereas in Canada, it would be impossible to keep an estate open that long.
Interesting. Okay. A life in being, you said.
Yeah, it's all about, because that's what the rule triggers, the rule against perpetuities from starting. And I mean, anyone who's gone through law school, like I know Bondo has gone through law school, that rule against perpetuities is like the nightmare thing that nobody ever wants to learn about.
No.
No. Wow. Trevor or Collins, do you have any questions, any follow-up on this?
I'm just absorbing. This is all new to me, so I like hearing it. It's intriguing.
Trevor?
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. So, yeah, no, I got a couple more, like, follow-ups to that, because it's just the life in being. So why would someone want to keep, I mean, this is to Bondo and Hussein both, why would you want to keep an estate open for 300 years? Like, I understand Elvis Presley's is because, well, that's Gracetown, is it called? Graceland. And, you get Michael Jackson's estate is still open for other reasons, but mainly because of also tourists as well.
Legacy and tax deferral, right?
Yeah, because you can keep paying out to beneficiaries. And it's a multi-generational scheme, right? And also, a lot of these larger people historically, they didn't have many families, right? Or many kids who survived them to adulthood or whatever. So there wasn't really anyone. So it was all about, and also they just had altruistic. That if you want to keep giving to, charities and other causes and things like that, essentially take advantage of as the laws evolve and defer. That's why, like, some of the biggest lobbyist expense is actually paid by estates. Because, they'll amend the tax laws for contributions. They'll say, hey, we'll contribute here. We'll give, a political donation there, whatever it might be. There's so much flexibility that it's allowed. And it allows you to keep donating and giving, right? Because, like, Jefferson Estate still contributes to, like, things like the Library of Congress and things.
Right. Okay.
So it keeps the estate alive, and it allows you to trickle it out longer.
Exactly.
Interesting.
So you reduce the tax bill on it instead of a deemed disposition, and you're taxed on it on death.
Wow. That's just crazy on how, because you hear a lot of these things, and I think what happens, especially now, when people talk about, the ultra rich are getting richer and all this kind of stuff. But I think that's the media in the U.S. than it is. And Canada picking up on that and also mentioning that in their newscast. But the reality is, you hit on it, Hussein, that the tax system and the tax structure is completely different in the two countries. It's, you can't even do half the stuff that in Canada, what you can do in the U.S. And it also, too, you mentioned on our call before, which was, it differs from state to state. You have some states that have outlawed life in being.
Yeah, they want to get, they're in the process. None have fully gotten rid of it, but they're, like, Texas is one of them that has legislation pending that's expected to pass, that they will just abolish the rule against perpetuities. And I know West Virginia is another, because it's a way to attract dollars into the state.
Now, would they grandfather the existing?
They would, as part of them trying to bring, existing dollars into the... Because it's the whole motivation for doing it, right? Is some of these poorer states, they need revenue desperately, right? Or people at least in state doing business or whatever. So they want dollars at least somehow coming in there, because it's very important to them. And yeah, I mean, honestly, like, tax laws in the U.S. are fascinating. And I think, it's part of why they're as successful as they are. And also just one other comment on trust in the U.S., Yeah, there was on I forget, like, how long ago, but in the very recent past, there was a ProPublica publication that actually said what the effective tax rate of all these multi-billionaires were, like Bezos, Musk, a few of them had it leaked. And the way they did it is they were able to do it based on the fact that, excuse me, they were able to do it on the basis that they hold their shares in trust in a lot of these companies. And therefore, their cost base, personally, they don't have to declare anything because the trust can keep going without having to pay tax.
So
until they're in this position.
So the shares are considered the life and being in that particular instance, or?
Well, they can appoint themselves the life and being or whatever, right? And then like they can say my children, but then my children, the child can be, because that child was in existence at the time of the trust. Or they can create another trust. Like, it's not like they rely on one trust. There are dozens.
Roll it down.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a family trust, right? That they're running.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, just keynote is we're speaking very on a high level. Like, this is very technical. And like, yes, I said, like, it's a touch of an artist to actually, you know, make this work in an effective way, because it's very, very easy to get this stuff wrong. And even in Canada, like, yes, estate planning is somewhat simpler in Canada, but even in Canada, like, honestly, like, I've seen numerous wills prepared by lawyers and sometimes themselves, or just people have ideas because they think they Google something and, you know, they're an expert now, whatever the case might be, where there's tons of things that they're making mistakes on. It's even simple stuff, right? Like, everyone, I hope, in a will has a community property saying that, oh, you know what, everything I inherit, you know, doesn't form into it. But they don't realize that that will clause only applies to property that was inherited at the time, if it was inherited when they were married. But if the person inherited it before they got married, then you still have to educate someone that, you know, this is now still just, you have to declare this as net family property, and it's a whole different program that applies, you know, or simple things like what happens to digital assets, making sure you follow the terms of, you know, the digital assets that, you know, provider, and how do you also secure them? How do you make sure that they're dealt with the next generation? Especially because today, you know, I know a few people who are influencers whose social media presence is worth some money. It might not be worth a lot, but, mm-hmm, you know, they do like TikTok videos or this or that, like, you know, even just in the Burlington region, I've got a couple of clients who do it. And they make like a good six-figure hustle just being influencers online. But how do you control that portfolio? It all comes down to your will, you know, and drafting the right clause, you know, and so just doing it as a generic one-size-fits-all approach can really screw people.
Right. Interesting. Okay. All right. Bondo, you got anything else to add there?
No, that was good.
Because that just is, I find this absolutely fascinating, especially the law, the U.S. law type of stuff. I mean,
it's so intricate, like Hussein said, though, right? Like, I mean, the intricacies of it, I mean, he's just scraping the surface in terms of what the structure of this trust would probably look like, right, in order to shelter the assets. But yeah, no, it's good. It's neat.
Awesome. Collins, Lindy, anything else?
Nope, good. Quiet on this one.
Yeah. Well, Collins had his second shot yesterday, so he's, you know, kind of just taking it all in, you know. He's just in a daze.
He's ready for risky business, though.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Hussein, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. That was very insightful. And if you don't mind, we'd love to have you back. Sure. To talk on maybe some other international law stuff that might come up down our pipeline from our listeners. So again, to anyone that's listening, to anyone that's watching on the Book of Faces or Twitter or wherever you watch us, please keep the questions coming. And now we do have resources for international law stuff. So you've got questions on like the Panama Papers and the Paradise Papers and all this kind of stuff. This is the type of stuff that, you know, we could bring in Hussein and he could probably maybe give a legal opinion. And as a matter of fact, guys, you have no idea. So I got a funny story for our listeners too. So we were chatting and I had Hussein over and my wife wanted to be a part of the conversation. So she comes down and my wife only really follows like pop culture. That's her main shtick. I don't. And maybe a couple months ago during COVID, we had a whatchamacallit, the whole Free Britney with the movie or whatever, the whole case. So knowing Hussein's in law, but knowing nothing else about Hussein, just what kind of law, nothing like that. She just wanted to be a part of the conversation. So she comes down and she's just like, oh, so you're a lawyer. And you know, everyone's met Kristen on this podcast. And Hussein's like, yeah. And she's like, so what are your thoughts about Britney Spears and the conservatorship? Like, what are your thoughts? And here I am thinking, oh my God, the guy's like a POA, like wills, power of attorney lawyer, like he trusts and, you know, I, and not even... He goes on this 20-minute rant about conservatorship, knew it inside and out, and understood what was going on, like followed it in intricate detail. And I'm sitting here like this, our mutual clients like going like this, and Kristen is just enthralled, going like, oh my God, I never knew the details. So again, to our listeners, if you've got a question for Hussein, even on Britney Spears, you'll be pleasantly surprised. He'll have a legal opinion on it. He will have a legal. He blew me away. I thought he'd be like, well, I kind of watched the documentary and it sucks. You know, no. He had a very intricate answer, a very legalese intricate answer, which I was very impressed by. That's hats off to you, bud. I'm pretty happy. That's pretty good.
Nice. It wouldn't change it.
What's that?
And I called it. They wouldn't change it.
And they wouldn't change it. Like, he called it, too. Like, it was insane. It was, anyways, I won't go into any more detail, but yeah. I thought it was funny, by the way, my wife is, and I did not expect the answer that he gave. And on that note, Bondo, if you want to roll us out.
Help us help you stay informed.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know, and he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from jeffwoodsradio.com.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Hear ye! Hear ye!
Produced by Cryer Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.